sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
On this New Year's Eve, we welcome everyone to the Steve Jones Show as Penn State gets ready to take on Georgia in Jacksonville. We're going to have a fun show for you coming up today. And I know that tomorrow is New Year's Day, and tomorrow, of course, is a Friday, and we're not going to have a show tomorrow. But we always have Brewers Outlet sponsor us on Friday. Well, might I suggest on this New Year's Eve that you stock up, make sure you have everything for that New Year's Eve party right now. Make sure you have everything ready for New Year's Day so you can watch the Peach Bowl, the Rose Bowl, the Sugar Bowl. Make sure you're stocked up for the Tax Slayer Bowl here in Jacksonville coming up on Saturday. It'll be a noon kickoff. We're on the air beginning at 10:30. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere. Soft drinks, snacks, water. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every single day. The pickle bar is second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. I'm in the mobile Sunbury Motors studio in Jacksonville. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Going to have fun over the next couple of hours. What do we have coming up? Well, in this half hour, I'll sit down and talk with Penn State head football coach James Franklin. I will sit down and talk with Penn State quarterback Christian Hackenberg. And then, in the final hour and a half, the cast of the Blue White Tailgate Show, which is seen across the state in Philadelphia, Harrisburg, York, Wilkes-Barre, State College, Altoona. It's produced by WHVL-TV. John Stroh is the producer. My co-hosts happen to be Todd Sadowski and also Trey Bauer, the ever and forever colorful Trey Bauer. And they will be the ones that over the next hour and a half, we will break down the national championship games, the playoff games, bowl games. We have big ones coming up, obviously, today. In fact, the first semifinal will start just as we get to the second hour of the show. Obviously, right now you get the Peach Bowl going on right now. But in the second hour of the show, you'll have the showdown coming up between Clemson and Oklahoma. And then tonight it's Alabama and Michigan State. Question is whether people are going to watch these games. We'll find out. That is the big part as to what will the ratings be on a New Year's Eve. Will people on this particular day change their viewing habits with college football? It's a big gamble. I think it's a gamble that will pay off in some ways. Coming up as we continue, I'll sit down with James Franklin, and then I'll also talk with Christian Hackenberg as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this New Year's Eve. Don't forget, coming up just after the top of the hour, the first of the college football playoff games. We'll be here until 5 o'clock this evening. Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer, John Stroh from Blue White Tailgate. We'll break everything down for you. You'll have a lot of fun over the next hour and a half. A few moments, James Franklin, brought to you today. Even though it's Thursday, we want to make sure everyone knows about Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And, of course, I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, mobile Sunbury Motors Studio here in Jacksonville. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Christian Hackenberg is the only quarterback in the history of Penn State football to throw for better than 8,000 yards in his career. He has 47 career touchdown passes. That's also a Penn State record. He's done all of this in 3 years. He's also been a guy that's been maligned during the course of his Penn State career. That's the way it goes. It comes with, obviously, the territory. But Christian Hackenberg is also a guy that when everything was up against the fan with this program, and he could have dropped his commitment to Penn State and gone anywhere, he stayed. He stayed and played for Penn State. He stayed at a time when the university... He stayed at a time when the football program desperately needed Christian Hackenberg to stay. He also has been under a lot of heat as time has gone. It's not been easy playing behind the offensive line at times, and he never once has sat there and blamed anybody for anything. I had a chance to talk to Christian Hackenberg about, you know, the setup, how things are, and also about his footwork.
How comfortable are you? Where's your comfort level with your footwork right now compared to where it was? Not a major adjustment, but how comfortable are you?
Yeah, I think understanding the footwork within the scheme, with the system, is the thing that I improved on. But at the same time, I think I need to improve on my footwork consistency overall from play to play now, in terms of the speed at which I drop, the purpose in which I do my movements. I need to focus those things and turn those, fine-tune those, I guess you could say. So, I feel a lot more comfortable within the footwork and within what the system's asking me to do. But, you know, there's still a little tweaking to do in there.
Obviously, the great quarterbacks are the ones, let's take Brady and Manning, for example. They probably know where all 21 chess pieces are on the field at all times. It's just the way they are. It's just, they're in their 30s. They know. For you, how slow has the game become for you? And in this system, when did you start to feel like it had slowed down for you?
I think just having now two seasons under my belt, seeing so many different things thrown at me, the game has definitely slowed down, and I'm seeing things and I'm realizing and picking things up that, I couldn't have seen myself doing my freshman year. But, I think within the system, it took off towards the end of last year. I was seeing things really well at the end of last year, just getting us into the right play, not necessarily executing it the way that it needed to be executed or whatever from my end or as a unit. But, seeing the things, it really clicked last year. And I felt like there's last couple, three or four games, I played really well mentally and understanding, realizing things, setting protections, whatever it is. So, that's when it really clicked for me. And now just fine-tuning it and getting ready to go with it, I think, is the biggest thing.
Finally, when you walk out of the building, number five in the list is ignore the noise. All right. Has it been – it seems like the world seems to know what you think all the time, and only you know what you think all the time. Has that been difficult?
It hasn't been difficult because I have such a great family and such a great support system with my teammates and the coaching staff. So for me, it hasn't been as difficult as people would think it would be. But it's just kind of the way it is. You're in the spotlight all the time. My high school coach always said you're in the fishbowl, and the fishbowl seems to get bigger and bigger as you get higher and higher in the ranks. So, for me, it's whatever. I just really focus on what the people who care about me and who I care about and what they think. And that's just sort of my mentality about that.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
No problem, Steve. Thank you.
Quarterback Christian Hackenberg leading the Nittany Lions against Georgia in the Taxpayer Bowl, which will be day after tomorrow here in Jacksonville with a noon kickoff on the air on News Radio 1070 WKOK, beginning at 10:30 with the Dietz and Watson tailgate show. James Franklin, head coach of the Nittany Lions, finishing up his second year. They've had a series of close games over time. In fact, of the games that James Franklin has coached here at Penn State, the first 25, 11 of the 25, 44% of them have been decided by a touchdown or less. Penn State is 6-5 in those games, including 2-1 in those games this season. He knows that his football team and his program happen to be getting better. I had a chance to sit down and ask him specifically about that.
Yeah, I think our trainers, as well as our strength staff, as well as our players, have really committed to that. The last 2 years, we've had a lot of wear and tear on our guys, really, over the last 4 years. And they've done a good job. For the most part, we've been able to get to the games with a little bit of change on our roster and some rotation on our roster. But for the most part, our guys have been good. There's some guys that at the end of the year we'll talk about that I've been really impressed that have had dramatic, significant years for us and haven't been 100% all year long. So I'm really proud of all those guys, the strength staff, the trainers, and our players for their commitment to being pros in terms of taking care of their body with nutrition, sleep, and treatment.
How difficult has it been trying to find combinations up front, even this late in the year?
It's been a challenge because we only have so many moving parts that we think factor in at this point right now. You know, and I think a lot of it too is we're looking for matchups. You know, what's the best guys on the field to match up with the specific teams we play? Because that's really been our issue. The games where we have been able to battle and scrap with people up front and maybe not always dominate, but just scrap and battle and get a hat on a hat, we've been successful. The games where we've had some mismatches at a certain position or another, and it's never really been one. It's been a different guy. They're the games that we've struggled. So that's what we're constantly looking at, the team we're playing, you know, where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are, and how can we match that up.
What kind of secondary play have you had over the last few weeks?
I think good. We've had some opportunities to make plays. Haven't made them, you know, consistently. I think we can be a little bit more challenging when it comes to routes. I see us at times playing the not give up the big play, where at corner, you got to have a little bit of that streak in you where you're going to take some calculated risks at times to make plays. You know, some guys are able to acquire that over time. Some guys kind of have that. That's just kind of who they are in their nature. And we're kind of right down the middle of that right now. So, you know, they've done some nice things. You know, we need to tackle better. I think that's one of the things that's really going to, you know, stand out for us is being able to get guys on the back or tackle with leverage, which is what we've talked about as well. If you are going to miss a tackle, make sure you miss it with the right hat placement and the right leverage. So now that guy cuts back and avoids you to the rest of the defense, your 10 buddies.
You and I both know you're a better football team than a year ago when we did the same conversation. If I were to say you're 4 to 6 plays away in a couple of these games, would I be fair in my assessment?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you can even think back to even Ohio State game. Early in that game, we had some really real opportunities. Northwestern, you can think of them. You know, Michigan, you can think of them. So, yeah, I think that's fair. And those 4 to 6 plays are critical. And that's really what it is in most games. It's 4 to 6 critical plays on offense and 4 to 6 critical plays on defense, and I would say probably 2 to 3 on special teams. And you have to make those plays. You have to make the right call to put your guys in position to be successful. And then as a player, you work like crazy. You may play 80 plays, and as a corner, you may only really get 2 opportunities to impact the game. You got to impact the game. Same thing at wideout. You don't really know. Or when is that significant block going to happen as an offensive lineman? You know, so it's all those things across the board. And you know, we're making progress, but we have to consistently make a few more of those plays.
It would be easy in this situation that you've been in the last 2 years, what I've referred to as the recovery period, to panic along the way. And panic would be go the JC route. Panic would be to just take the red shirts off of freshmen and just play them as many as you can because you feel like at the immediate time it might be the best thing to do, but long term for the program, not the best thing to do. You've redshirted in each of the last 2 years. What do you think that – how hard has that decision been for you, and what do you think it's meant to the future of the program?
I think that's a great point because I see across the country now people aren't redshirting because of this very reason, the way our industry has changed. You know, very rarely are people getting the amount of time to build a program like you said. You look at Coach Beamer at Virginia Tech, one of the most successful coaches. Well, you look how his career started, you know, at Virginia Tech. So what happens is coaches are responding to that, and they're not redshirting guys, and they're getting them on the field, even if they're only playing 2 or 3 plays a game. And where is the guy going to be the most value? As a true freshman at 17 or 18 years old, or as a redshirt senior at 22 years old? I think we all know what that is. I will tell you this, you know, the last couple weeks, I start second-guessing my decision like we all do because we got some really talented guys. You come out to practice every day.
Oh, yeah.
We got some really talented guys that are redshirting and out there on the scout teams every single day, and I'm just sitting there saying, maybe should have played that guy. Maybe should have played that guy. And we got two freshman wideouts, Irvin Charles and Juwan Johnson, that are both 6'4" now, 230 pounds, and both ran 4.5 for us last week. And I'm looking at him like, but I do think it was the right decision. Whenever you get in tough situations like this, you always second guess yourself and, you know, and reevaluate, and you should be doing it.
Head football coach James Franklin, and Penn State will take on Georgia in the Taxslayer Bowl. That will be Saturday here in Jacksonville at noon. We're on beginning at 10:30 with the Deeds and Watson Tailgate Show right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. That has been something, and I've stayed away from talking about this, but I think it's something you have to have a frank conversation about. And that is, I've really stayed away from talking about the effects of sanctions and so forth, because there's so many people now say, everything's over, I don't want to hear about sanctions, it's, quote, not an excuse. And you know what? My response has now become, the heck with it. I'm going to start, you got to start telling the truth as to what the deal is and not responding or a lack of response, because you don't want to make a certain part of the fan base upset. The certain part of the fan base that is upset when they say sanctions are an excuse, stop it. You people are, okay, you're wrong. In plain English, you're wrong. This is a recovery period. You don't go from having 60-some-odd players, of which you played 44 last year, and go, boom, that's it, back, magic wand, done, got everything back, here we go. You have to build yourself back to that. And it takes time to build yourself back to that. Coming up, Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer, John Stroh, the Blue White Tailgate Show crew takes over for the final hour and a half. It's going to be a lot of fun. Bottom of the hour news next here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this New Year's Eve. And today's show, of course, brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. Stock up for the college football playoff, which gets underway in just a short bit. Oklahoma and Clemson, Alabama, Michigan State, the doubleheader tonight. And then, of course, tomorrow it's the Fiesta, Citrus, Outback, Rose, and Sugar Bowls. And Penn State plays Saturday in the Taxslayer Bowl. Final NFL weekend as well for the regular season. Stock up at Brewers Outlet now, Reagan Street in Sunbury, and the Beverage Supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Did I mention beer? Oh, yeah. And on top of that, water, they roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day, soda, snacks, and the pickle bar is second to none, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. And the Sunbury Motor Studio Mobile today here in Jacksonville as Penn State gets ready to take on Georgia day after tomorrow at the old Gator Bowl, now called Everbank Stadium here in Jacksonville. Kickoff set for noon. Airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK is set for 10:30. Time now for this day in sports history. And we'll take it back all the way to 1958, Willie Shoemaker, the first jockey to win the National Riding Championship. He did it four times in his career. Packers beat the Giants 37-0 for the NFL Championship on this day in 1961. In 1967, on this day, the Ice Bowl took place. New Year's Eve, Green Bay, 13 below zero natural temperature, 46 below wind chill, Bart Starr, quarterback sneak, and that allowed the Packers to beat the Cowboys 21-17. A year later, the Jets won their first AFL, their only AFL championship, and eventually went on to win the Super Bowl. They beat the Oakland Raiders 23-17. 41st Sugar Bowl in 1974 featured Nebraska against Florida. Alabama beat Penn State on this date 13-6 in the Sugar Bowl. That was played on New Year's Eve. And the epic Boise State win over Arizona 38-30 in the Fiesta Bowl took place just 1 year ago. And that's a look at this day in sports history. For the last few years, I've had a lot of fun on a television show, Blue White Tailgate. Co-host Todd Sadowski from the York, Lancaster, Harrisburg area is a pros pro beyond words. Trey Bauer, former Nittany Lion, part of that 86 national championship team, and our producer, Sunbury's own. You know him as Kerry Stroh. He goes by professionally today the name John Stroh. Guys, welcome. Great to have you with us.
John Stroh is the producer. You can say hi.
Hello.
Trey Bauer is the football genius.
I don't know about that, but
I'll take it.
And Todd Sadowski is legitimately the brains of the operation.
Yeah, I like that intro.
Guys,
you knew he would.
Todd, first of all, how interested are you, and are you as interested as I am, that when we get to Ohio State Notre Dame with this thing as to the reaction of our third co-host?
Well, all I know is January 1st, 1 p.m., Trey Bauer will not have ESPN on his television because Ohio State and Notre Dame go head-to-head. But I would love to sit there in his living room and watch that game with Trey, because who do you root for? I mean, all he's done is rail on both teams all year, but I just got to think he won't be watching.
How about a nothing-nothing tie in, like, quadruple overtime? How about that?
Yeah. Hey, guys, it would be like equivalent to waterboarding, Trey. Make him watch Ohio State and Notre Dame.
I think Trey's rooting for minor injuries, nothing long term. Just minor injuries.
2 points in that. One, are you sure he's rooting for only minor injuries? And two, the only thing that could possibly top that would be, you know, the SEC clash that perhaps involves Alabama, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, somebody from the state of Mississippi.
What I laughed about in watching the selection show was the debate about if Alabama should be two or Michigan State should be two. Who cares? Yeah. It just, hey, you know what that determined? What color your jersey is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that they're trying to draw up interest. They're trying to create something out of nothing, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's literally been made up over this past year. And, you know, it used to be you would try to get the top two teams together and do it in a way where it's more, not as much science that it is now.
There's a lot of science that goes in. Right? In other words, I looked at these four teams. I thought they were the best. That's scientific.
Yeah, it was pretty clear cut this year.
It was. Now, Adam Rittenberg, to his credit, wrote an interesting article about what an 8-team playoff would look like. I mean, Todd, are you ready for 8?
No, I'm not. I like seeing the 4 go right now. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I think, and they've got some other great bowl matchups that are still, I mean, they're still kind of dipping their feet in the water with this thing. You know what I mean? They still want some of the traditional bowl matchups, which are getting some great games. If you look down the rundown, yeah, there's too many of them. I mean, there's 40 of them, but there's some really intriguing matchups. But the semifinals are fantastic. All four, both years, have been conference champs. The fifth team out really doesn't have much of an argument. I mean, last year, maybe the Big 12, a little bit more argument than Stanford this year, who lost twice.
Yes.
I don't want to hear from anybody who's lost twice. I don't care how deep your conference is. So it's set up really well, and the semifinals are going to be fantastic games, both of them, both matchups.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the two loss, and it did, it played out perfectly for them, where this was not the NCAA basketball tournament committee, which then had to sit there and say, okay, now we need to seed them. Now what region, what pod they're in. They're like, we got handed four teams. Our work is done here.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I don't think they had as much work to determine those four teams as the 5-7 like losing teams going to bowl games, which is, I just don't even understand that. I mean, seriously, give me a break.
And you know the odd thing is? A couple of those might win.
Oh, I agree. I think you read about that.
Yeah, but it's like, who cares if you're 5-7, then you're 6-7? I mean, does anyone really? I mean, other than the alumni, other than the people that went to that school, those schools, I mean, to me, you know, once you get to having teams with 7 or less losses, should they even be in bowl games?
Right.
I mean, really?
Well, the funny thing is, guys, you look at the lineup and you got a 5-7 Nebraska team. First and foremost, you'd never think that the Cornhuskers would accept the bowl bid at 5-7, but that goes to show you how much they need those 15 practices. But the other part of it is, look at the bowl they get. They get a game against UCLA. Poor Temple wins like 10 games. They get Toledo. I mean, the tie-in games for the Big Ten are just outstanding for that conference.
And that brings us to the tie-in game that Penn State gets, the Tax Slayer Bowl. The one thing I will say about what the College Football Playoff did, they required that if you're going to be in it, you had to keep your name in it. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was the Chick-fil-A Bowl. They had to bring the name Peach back into it because they know that there might be a chance, for example, like the Fiesta Bowl, which is, what is the Fiesta? Is the Bullfrog? Yeah, the
Battle Frog.
Yeah.
What's a Battle Frog? I mean, seriously, Hold Todd, on. Come on.
Todd has younger kids.
I actually know this.
Okay. Oh, you know, too.
Yeah, I'm not that young, guys. They're younger, but you know. I don't know. All I know is it's in front of Fiesta, the old Battle Frog.
What they do is they run like a tough mutter competitions. Like it's akin to that. What surprised me was that corporation was big enough to bite off the Fiesta.
That's how you spend your weekends, John? The Tough Mudder?
It's really
you know,
scary.
I have the physique to back that statement up, too.
Now everyone knows how the meetings in the green room go. You know, I'm glad that there are four of us here because one of us out of four came up with the answer. And that's usually how this show goes. One out of four does come up with the correct answer at some point. Penn State, though, gets the Tax Slayer Bowl, which at some point some broadcaster on some network is going to refer to as the Gator Bowl. I wonder who that might be. Penn State, Georgia. We will start with Todd. Thoughts on the matchup off the top?
Well, I like it. I mean, it's two similar teams in that neither one of them kind of has a signature win this year. I mean, Georgia's record's a little better, 9-3. But they didn't beat really anybody of note, certainly no top 25 teams. They underachieved as far as, you know, their actual victories. Their crossover games to the SEC West, it was almost like akin to Iowa's schedule. They missed just about everybody that was really solid except for Alabama, who just shredded them. So I think both teams are similar in the sense when they did go up against a team that was clearly highly ranked or favored, they really didn't do too well. Penn State didn't do too well against Michigan State and Ohio State, and Georgia got throttled by Alabama, and Georgia beat them 27—Florida beat them 27-3. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's a really, really similar matchup in that they have talent, but you don't know what you're going to get from week to week in each game.
He showed up prepared.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you, like, tip him off to give him the questions
first before the test? Completely unfair. No.
Hey, you mentioned the brains of the operation. I got to live up to the billing.
Well, so far you're throwing fastballs at 98 on the slow gun. Trey, what about you?
Well, I mean, I think a couple things. I mean, as a traditionalist type of guy, it's interesting that this is the only second time that Georgia has played Penn State in football. Which, you know, I hope it goes as well, you know, the second time as it did the first time with Penn State winning its first national championship. I think that, again, I think, you know, this is probably another conversation for another day. But to me, when you have preseason rankings and you have teams that are ranked before, say, midway through the season, I mean, you've got so many teams that are, quote unquote, overrated. I mean, I don't know if Iowa was even in the top 25 this year, were they? Mm-hmm. Right? I
mean, Not to start.
And I'm sure Georgia was certainly in the top 15, 20.
Top five.
Okay, top five. So they're a top five team. They're playing the Bullfrog Tax Slayer, whatever game it's called, which we know it as the Gator Bowl, right? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, they lost their head coach, which that's a whole other conversation. That's just insane to me.
Which we're going to have.
Right. And their best player, who I think is a really special player.
Nick Chubb.
And I think that I think if he was around, you know, a couple of those games could have been decided a little bit differently and we wouldn't be having the conversation Penn State, Georgia.
Yeah, James Franklin's interim coaches tour continues with one last stop.
This is number four.
Yeah, isn't that? No, that's incredible.
Which then brings me to that. That's one area about the bowl games. There's so many interim coaches because of the merry-go-round. Let's get to Mark Richt, who will not coach this game.
Yep,
it's going to be Brian McClendon, who played at Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
was actually a very good player at Georgia. He's been the wide receiver coach, which he'll continue to do. He's also a recruiting coordinator. And he gets the coach this game. Mark Richt won 145 games. Mark Slaybaugh on ESPN.com wrote an article headlined, Richt won a lot, but not the right ones. So, is that where we are in sports today? You won a lot, but not the right ones?
Well, I mean, it's such a moronic thing to say. I mean, winning any football game is really, really difficult. And to win as many games as he did consistently over a period of time where I don't think that they had any major infractions. I think that they had kids that were trying to do the right thing. I think that his staff, you know, did a fabulous job. And if you look at, you know, some of the stuff that I've seen over the last week or so where, you know, he's in top five all time for his first 15 or the quickest to get right to 150 wins. I mean, obviously we're playing a little bit more games now, but I mean, it's a really difficult thing to do. I mean, you think about the clowns in Miami. I mean, salivating when they're trying to get rid of like Mark Richt. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's like, you know, Christmas came early, very early for them.
But guys, is this really a shocker in the SEC? I mean, this has been going on for a long time. As a frame of reference, I worked in Knoxville, Tennessee. The year after, I got to arrive after they won the national championship.
Right.
But so Phil Fulmer, do you remember Philip Fulmer at Tennessee?
Yep.
The guy wins a national championship at Tennessee, and then a couple years later, the fans were just, they were frustrated because he wasn't a good in-game coach. Well, he went to the Fiesta Bowl the next year. They lost. But, I mean, the expectations for some of the programs to compete year after year, LSU almost ran Les Miles out of town. He's got the number one recruiting class coming in next year, and he's won how many games there? So part of it is the culture of that conference. It just doesn't shock me when some of these upper echelon programs make these decisions based on where they think they should be as to what they've been doing.
But, you know, I don't think this isn't something that's just – you know, SEC centric. You know, they haven't cornered the market on this. I mean, if I remember it, I think Larry Fedora was on the hot seat coming into this year. And, you know, I know lots of Steeler fans who do not like Mike Tomlin. And last night, if you watch that game last night, they ran a graphic in the third quarter that Mike Tomlin is like the fourth fastest, you know, coach. Like, he has the fourth most wins for a coach under 44 years of age in the NFL. He's among Don Shula and John Madden. And there's people that want to run him out of town. So the corner, you know, the market on craziness, you know, just doesn't pertain to the SEC.
Stupidity, I would say. I like that word.
I was going to go with crazy, but hey, you know.
How many coaches have been replaced in the Big Ten this year?
Sure.
Right? I mean,
Rutgers did, Maryland did. Now, Minnesota had to because, I mean, Jerry's sick.
Yeah.
They weren't going to.
But three of those are outstanding circumstances, though.
Right.
You know, when you look at Illinois with the reports and things like that.
Yeah, look at what
went on at Rutgers
and
Jerry killing his health. I mean, those three are way different than when you look at what the SEC has going on. When, like Todd said, I mean, Les Miles averaged over 10 wins a year.
Sure.
You know, they had 5 10-win seasons before he got there and have had 10 since he's been there. And they were talking about getting rid of him. So, I mean, sign me up for 10 wins a year.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people would love to see 10 wins a year. A lot of people would be. I'm gathering you're not watching the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl.
Seriously, what is the Popeyes Bahamas Bowl?
Okay, we're done.
Play Western Michigan. It's the Bahamas, fellas, for the holidays. The Hawaii Bowl would have been fine too.
Todd, they should just call that the Boondoggle Bowl.
Hey, the Hawaii Bowl actually is going to be. I shall watch that without question. That's San Diego State, which is the last time they lost was here. They won the Mountain West, and not only that, except for the Air Force Championship game, were never challenged by anybody in the Mountain West.
Yeah.
Nobody challenged them. Penn State's the last team to beat them. I want to get back to the winning is not enough deal. You know, didn't win the right games. Todd, you cover a lot of sports. You know, all four of us do. What is it about the sports culture? Can we lay some of this? and I want to be unfair to them because obviously we've all enjoyed watching the channel often. But can some of this be laid now at what ESPN's doing analytically, talking about the importance of winning and signature wins and things like that?
Well, certainly, if you look at it from a college football standpoint, I mean, look at all the publicity, all the shows. Every single day there's a program on about college football, and every program's kind of under the microscope. The recruiting rankings go all year round. I remember 10 years ago it was difficult to kind of find out, you know, who was going where. And I mean, never, now you're seeing the kids' pictures, and they're making decisions on Twitter. They're making it to national television. You know, you get your logo out there. So, you know, sure, certainly the more exposure that they give, the more attention it gets. I don't know if I'd just lay it at their feet because, I mean, they're the ones that do the most of it.
Right. And the publicity is great for the
sport. They bring
it
out to the attention. But, you know, it's got to be part of the fan base. It's got to be part of, you know, what you're coming from. You know, what, if it's a small college town and that's the main thing in that particular town. You know, in Philadelphia, do they care that Matt Rhule just got a 6-year contract, you know, and he's doing a great job at Temple? I don't, you know what I mean? I don't know. So it's really kind of what is the most important thing. I mean, Nick Saban's what, the highest paid state employee in the state of Alabama, you know, as are probably a bunch of college football coaches. So some of it just depends on where they're at and what's important to that fan base and to that area.
No offense, but in the state of Alabama, Nick Saban had a better year than the governor. So,
yeah, because Barkley didn't run.
That's what he wants to do next.
because Charles didn't run for governor. Yeah. That's right.
That's what Alabama needs. Alabama needs Charles Barkley to be the governor.
I mean, you played, and you knew what it was like to be under a microscope. I mean, you had one season where you played where Penn State went 6-5, and that's, quote, not meeting expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You had two other years where you played for the national championship along the way. And then your senior year, it wasn't a national championship year. So from a player's perspective, what kind of outside pressure or questions did you get that you just sat back and you didn't like and you looked at the question and said, you don't seem to get it, what it's like on this side?
Well, I think it's not so much sports has changed. I mean, I think that technology and the advent of technology has completely turned the thing upside down. I mean, to give you an example, so when I was playing in the early to mid 80s, you know, you never spoke to the media. There was no way for you to, unless you literally, if I literally got on the phone and picked up and called Ron Bracken from the CDT.
Right. Like
there was one paper up here. There were a handful of radio stations, and you never interacted with the media. You didn't interact with anyone else. You heard people say things. I mean, what I would say to you is, you know, for us, we were 6-5 in 84. You know, people were like, okay, Joe doesn't know what he's doing. We go undefeated, win 20-something games in a row. We have a very solid 8-3 team, and they're ready to run them out. I mean, people were the local, not the local militia, but the local, you know, people were kind of talking. But it's so different now. I mean, you're a kid at Penn State. You're Christian Hackenberg. You're 20 years old. You can't go out anywhere. You can't, like, do things. People are taking your picture. They're posting it online. It's a totally different ball game now, and I don't think it's for the better, quite frankly.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, when you think about it, and it's just not sports. I mean, look across the landscape. You know, we're kind of in a, you know, we all work in an industry kind of where it's, where the priority now is to be first as opposed to, you know, possibly being, mm-hmm. you know, being correct, where sometimes we sacrifice that for speed. And when you look at the growth of media, you know, look at the media room on a Tuesday. Or look at the media room on a post game. You know, when you've got, and I'm not criticizing, but I'm just saying, you know, you've got, you know, lines 24/7 and all these lessons. And it's not just germane to Penn State. I mean, everybody's got it. And when you look at it, I mean, the coaches show on Thursday night. I mean, how many members of the media show up to the coaches show on Thursday night? And the scope is just so much broader that wasn't there before. Mm.
It used to be that, and I'm quoting I don't know the author, but there was a quote where it said, you know, make sure your brain is loaded before you shoot your mouth off. And I think what's happened now is, like, I really don't care about the Kardashians. I don't care that Bruce Jenner is not Bruce Jenner. I don't know what he is now. It doesn't matter to me. I don't really care. I think what happens is people get all crazy, like they have to be the first in. I think that's what you're saying, John. You have to be the first in to cover a story. And it's become, we've become like almost like a reality TV society. And to me, it's like, why don't we just kind of take a deep breath and say, okay, let's just take a time out here. Let's just kind of, you know, assess everything. And I mean, again, for Rick to be kind of unceremoniously let go after the record he's had there 15 years is disgraceful as far as I'm concerned.
Two things I've always told my class. Number one, I don't want you to be first and wrong. I want you to be second and right. And the other thing I've always told them is that I don't want you to be the loudest voice in the room. I want you to be the most respected voice in the room.
Mm-hmm.
We will take a break. Todd's like, oh, thank you. Still another hour to go with the gang. Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer, John Stroh from Blue White Tailgate. We will come back with the second hour of the show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.